Springtime on the North Dakota prairies is a wondrous sight. The ice and snow of winter melt and leave in their wake a carpet of green. Purple crocuses dot the sunny sides of rocky buttes. They're followed by patches of yellow sweet peas and sky blue penstemons. The air is sweet and kind. Puffy white clouds float by in an azure sky. And it's easy to forget that the same paths walked on a June evening, 6 months earlier, could be paths of great danger, filled with cold, snow, and the raw winds of winter. 100 years have brought many changes to the prairies. Now trees stand tall like sentinels, outlining farmsteads and towns. Yellow street lamps and farmyard lights send out pools of light to welcome the traveler home. But 100 years ago, on this fragile short grass prairie, the only light was that of the moon or faint light from reflected stars, and nothing stopped the wind. Young Tom came out from Iowa in 1906 and staked out a homestead site in southwestern North Dakota. He returned in 1907, the year the Milwaukee Railroad reached the town site of Hettinger, North Dakota. His homestead was 2 miles west of town. A sod shanty, 50-pound sod bricks, thick walls that kept the shanty warm in the wintertime and cool in the summer. His shanty looked almost exactly like those of his neighbors, most of them bachelors like himself. A small cot at one end covered with buffalo robes, a cook stove, small table and chairs. And when the weather got cool enough in late fall, nearly everyone hung a slab of bacon from a hook in the ceiling. Tom worked at a lumber yard in town. Every morning he rose before dawn and fixed himself breakfast. And he brewed a pot of strong black coffee that he drank out of a blue tin enameled coffee cup with a white Edelweiss painted on the side, given to him by his mother before he left Iowa. He hiked 2 miles into town every morning. At the lumberyard, he did hard physical work, loading farm wagons, hefting heavy nail kegs, and in the small office, he did bookwork, next to the pot-bellied stove where he'd listen to the customers talk and tell stories. One morning in late October, Tom woke and shivered in the darkness. He broke a thin skim of ice from his water basin and dressed warmly. Woolen long johns, heavy woolen pants, flannel shirt. The weather was cool enough now, so he sliced bacon and fried it, drank his morning coffee. He pulled on a woolen jacket, wrapped a blue muffler around his neck that his mother had knit him for Christmas, and hiked the 2 miles into town, flapping his arms across his chest to keep warm. But by midday, that day was like one left over from summer. Sweat trickled down his neck. He rolled up his shirt sleeves and shed his coat. When he stepped next door to Barry's Cafe for lunch, he noticed far to the northwest a long line of blue-gray clouds. And when he stepped out of the cafe after lunch, those clouds blew in front of them the first snow of winter. Snow that fell heavier and deeper all afternoon. Snow that sifted through the slats in the lumberyard walls, making finger drifts and pillow drifts. And when he left the lumberyard in the early evening, he rounded the corner and was nearly blown off his feet by the force of the wind. He could see, coming out of the mist of snow, his neighbor, Mr. Gustafson, who reined in his horse and said, "Tom, listen to that wind. There's some blizzard brewing tonight. You'll never make it to your place. You best stay at my place tonight." And Tom said, "No, I know the way home." Mr. Gustafson said, "Gotta go, Tom. Have to catch a 6 o'clock train to Minneapolis. Got a funeral to go to." "Take my advice, Tom. This is going to be some blizzard." Tom continued on his way. He rounded the corner of Mirror Lake, west of town, and he was caught off guard by a sudden gust of wind that caused him to lose his balance. He fell. When he righted himself, for the first time he could not see the hand in front of his face. The wind seemed to be coming from all directions. Where was that tall butte at the edge of Mirror Lake, the one with the sandstone rocks that he used to mark his way into town every day? If he was south of that butte, there was 100,000 acres of open rangeland. A person could wander in that land and never be found till spring. And a voice in his head said, "Push into the wind." And he leaned against the wind, tightened the muffler around his neck. His hands began to feel like needles were pricking them. He pushed into the wind as the snow grew heavier and deeper, and his strong legs, used to heavy work, began to tremble with fatigue. And then the stories told around the pot-bellied stove just yesterday in the lumberyard office began to filter through his mind. The Syme sisters from Lemon, South Dakota. Two girls who decided to visit a neighboring farm. A sudden blizzard came up. The neighbors thought they heard crying in the night, but decided it was only the wind. The next morning, those girls were found huddled by an outbuilding, frozen to death. And then there was the story about the father and son up north at a coal mine about 100 miles away. The woman of the house always kept a kerosene lantern in a window to light their way home. That day she had run out of kerosene. A blizzard had come up, and the father and son missed the house by inches. They were found frozen to death in a field close to the house the next day. Stop thinking these thoughts. Push into the wind. And the wind keened around him, moaning low at his feet and shrieking around his head. Thoughts of his home in Iowa came to him. He could hear his mother's voice as she called her 7 children to supper. He could smell the catfish frying on the stove. He could hear his father's hammer ringing on the anvil in the blacksmith shop where he worked in Bancroft, Iowa. And he could hear the church bell on the day they buried his favorite sister, Jessie, dead of pneumonia at the age of 12. And he thought with sadness of his parents if they were to receive a telegram, "Your son Tom died in an early blizzard on the North Dakota prairies." Stop thinking these thoughts. Push into the wind. And the wind keened around him, moaning low at his feet and shrieking around his head. And then that soft, seductive voice swirled into his head. "Tom, you're so tired. Stop. Rest. The snow is so soft. You need to sleep." And again the voice roared back, "Push! Push into the wind!" And he pushed into the wind, and he flailed against the wind as if to hit a physical force. His hand struck out and hit the side of sod bricks. He knew he'd reached Gustafson's. He felt his way around the bricks, pushed open a door, slammed it shut behind him, instantly aware of the muffled sound of the wind. There was the faint warmth of a long-banked fire as he groped his way in the darkness across the room, fell into a small cot, covered himself with warm buffalo robes, and his last thought before drifting into a deep, safe sleep was that the wind and the cold could not reach him. The silence woke him. Snuggled deep in the warmth of buffalo robes, He thought of the day ahead. I hope Gustafson left a shovel in the house. I'm going to have to shovel my way out through the doorway. And then his stomach reminded him that he hadn't eaten for hours. So he peeled back a corner of the buffalo robe, and he could see a thin ray of weak sunlight flooding through a small pane of glass. He leaped to his feet, stretched high, saw a slab of bacon hanging overhead. And then resting on a small wooden table, he saw a blue tin-enameled coffee cup with a white Edelweiss painted on the side. He was home.